So let's start with this beautiful sutta. What should be done on the path of meditation and, on the Buddhist path or on the path in life, so we are gentle and kind with ourselves and with all beings on this planet. And even, beyond this planet. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depth, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Okay, did I miss one there? There is the last couple of words on the Metta Sutta are missing there. Being freed from all sense desires is not born again into this world. Yeah, so the Metta Sutta is basically also an instruction. Yes, sorry. Okay, all right. I just heard someone saying something. Okay, I hope you can hear me. So, for tonight, I wasn't expecting to be on. So, as Catherine was saying, I'm usually very prepared, but tonight maybe not so. But that is a teaching opportunity as well. But one thing that kind of went through my mind when I was meditating one time, and I felt it was a good kind of simile or a good way of thinking about meditation, was this notion of learning to fly, being free like a bird, and using that picture, using that simile to guide the meditation later down the track. So it kind of came up for me one time when I was meditating, and I realized it was something which kind of helped me along the way. And a bird is also something which is used in the sutta sometimes, especially to talk about contentment. So it talks about the freedom of the bird so that the bird is not burdened with all these kind of things that we usually are burdened with. He only has two things, and that is the two wings as its only burden. And that describes the monastic who only has, only, hopefully, his bowl and his robe that is to cover his body and to get enough food for the day. And this is kind of the ideal picture of a monastic who is traveling from place to place only with his bowl and robe and his, you know, basic belongings. And that's something I always liked as a layperson also, not just as a monastic. I mean, as a monastic, I don't travel that much. I used to travel a bit more as a layperson. I really enjoyed traveling because it gave me this freedom. I just felt so at ease and so free when I was on the road. And it was so much easier for me to let go of what was happening in the past and not to think too much about what is happening in the future. When I was traveling, I was present. I was traveling and just enjoying or just being there to see what is happening through the travel. So that is kind of the first thing that has to do with a bird, that he doesn't burden himself with all these kind of things. So that's the first, step to even be able to fly. But then, of course, as you will know, with the small birds that have to learn to fly, first of all, it's not a small feat. When I was in Newbury, I was lucky enough to have a hut, which was very, very close to a nest of the black and white birds that go what do they call again? The magpies, that's right. So there was a nest of magpies, and there were two magpies in that nest, and it was just so lovely to kind of watch them. It doesn't take such a long time. It's maybe 5 weeks. They grow rapidly, and then they have these kind of wings, and they don't know what to do with those wings, and they're flapping their wings in the wind, but they're still up on the tree, and they can't really fly. So I wasn't lucky enough to see them actually take off and fly, but usually that's it. You know, they hop out of the nest and they're in that tree. It's pretty high up, and then they have to more or less already know how that flying happens, how that flying works. So it's this flapping of the wings is kind of important as well. So for us to use that as a simile in meditation is also to realize that we have wings, that we have something which can support us and which can give us the ability to fly. Because in meditation, we have to let go of the foundation or of the ground or of so many things that we usually take for granted, that we usually take as our safety, so to speak, as well. Our personality, our name, our history, whatever it might be. And in meditation, we are kind of making that step out into something which is a bit unknown in the beginning. And that can be a bit scary. But if we flap our wings, if we learn in that tree to even, you know, hover a little bit, there were sometimes when it was windy, they were almost taking off, but they were still, you know, holding on to the branch, but kind of getting the feeling of how it feels to fly. And then once we are actually flying, this is also this kind of thing with effort. Very often people don't understand what right effort really is, and they put in way too much effort. So of course you do need a little bit of effort in the beginning to flap your wings and to kind of get out there and fly. But when you think about the birds who have to fly very, very long distances, you know, the storks and also the I can't think of them now. Those lovely white birds that also a little bit look like storks and have these huge wingspans, or even like a swan, you know. Sometimes these big birds, they need a bit of momentum. They need a bit of energy to get going. But then once they're going and once they're in the air, they can actually learn to soar. And they can learn to play with the air. They can get to know the air. They can get to know which currents of the air are supporting them and which currents of the air are not as supportive to have them even soar higher and glide and fly. And that's something that is very, very similar in meditation, where we have to go through this process of learning where these good currents are, where these supportive, where these energetic currents are, and to, so to speak, ride those currents. Right, so one thing that I wanted to talk about, now that was so to kind of give you a little bit of a picture, I, for the people who have heard me teach, I kind of like pictures. I have a bit of a mind that thinks in pictures and that gets inspired by pictures. So that's the way I teach as well. So now I will bring a little bit more technical things and we will try to bring those two things together. So in the scriptures, we often talk about factors that have to be there in order to be able to meditate and to be able to meditate deeply and to meditate for a longer period of time where we are sustained and where we're happy where we are. So we don't have to keep bringing ourselves back to the object of meditation. And there is five factors that the Buddha talks about. They're sometimes also called the jhana factors, but basically jhana is meditation, but a very deep kind of meditation, but it applies to all meditations. So the first two of those factors are the applied and the sustained attention. So when I was teaching in town recently, we talked about right effort. And one of the ways I really like to describe it these days is right application of the mind. So we make sure that we apply the mind to a object which is helpful, and we apply it in a way that is helpful as well. So it's the object, but it's also the way we, our attitude, the way we hold, sometimes people grasp their kind of object in meditation. And that leads to things like samadhi headache. When Ajahn Brahm heard that the first time, he said, I've never heard this term before. Samadhi headache doesn't happen for me because, you know, I'm just meditating and it's fun. And because there is no force, there is no headache. But if there is tension building up in your head or in other parts of your body, or even just tension in your mind, then this gives you some feedback. So you will realize that you are holding the meditation object in a way which is too forceful. So we do flap our wings, but we only flap our wings to have that applied attention in the beginning. So that means taking your mind and guiding it to a meditation object. And those meditation objects, they change during the meditation. First, it's more coarser objects like the body, or like just the feelings in the body. And then we can go to more subtle object later down the track where we are observing our breath, where we are with stillness, and when we can go really, really deep into blissful states, in stillness and in happiness. That kind of becomes the next object on the way there. So we have this applying of the mind, but please, please do that really, really gently. And then we have the sustained attention. But again, the attention is sustained not because we grab or hold. It is sustained because we rest. So we rest in our object. We rest on our object. We rest with the object. We even become the object later down the track. So it is a much, much gentler, much, much softer relationship. And that's why Ajahn Brahm often talks about, you know, having that relationship, like having a relationship to a person or to an animal or to someone else who reacts to too much force, who reacts to too much controlling, but they also react, but in a nice way, to kindness, to gentleness, to being very friendly towards that meditation object. Right, so then we have covered the first two of those factors. And the next two are called rapture and pleasure. Maybe not the best translations, but that's the ones that are kind of cursing around. In Pali, they're called piti and sukha. And they're basically feelings of happiness and joy. But rapture tells you that there can be quite physical things arising with that feeling as well. It is a certain excitement, but it is a very nice excitement. It is an excitement that draws you towards it, but it doesn't have this friction or this hardness and this harshness as much as a lot of other things that attract us out in the world. It is leading us to stillness and peace. And it is basically arising because we are settling on an object and we have started to let go of a lot of distractions. We have started to let go of a lot of things which are irritating or jarring or which are a burden. We often don't feel it if we are not sensitive enough, but when the sensitivity grows, we start to appreciate that kind of happiness that starts to arise in the meditation process. And sometimes it's a very gentle happiness, sometimes it's a very soft happiness. So our job there is to recognize it, to welcome it, and then to have it grow. And then the sukha part is more of a it's like when they say in some of the commentaries, it's like the piti is like when you are looking forward to eating something, for example. So you have this kind of attraction, you have this nice feelings arising in you because you're like, oh, there is some kind of food that I'm going to eat, to use a worldly example. And then once you have eaten the food, once that food has given you some sustenance, with that comes another type of joy. With that comes the type of joy which is satisfied, basically. It's a contentment joy because something has been fulfilled. But the fulfillment in the spiritual world doesn't happen by going for things, grasping things, possessing things, thinking about things. It comes by renouncing things. It comes through letting go of things. It comes through unburdening yourself. So we have these different happinesses that start to arise. And I hope that most of you during this meditation even can at least get those feelings in the body, if not in the mind. When you are working with the body sweep, when you're working with your body and you're relaxing it, everybody will know the kind of nice feeling, the rapture and the pleasure that arises when we relax the body. And the same thing happens when we are relaxing the mind and when we are entering into deeper and deeper states of stillness. Right, so that is four factors for the people who have been counting. So there is one more. And the last one is the unification or the collectedness of the mind, which happens very, very naturally at this stage, because as I was describing now, it all kind of leads to this immersion, as Ajahn Sujato often calls it. And the Pali term there is ekagata, and in English it's often translated as one-pointedness, which is basically translating the Pali word, but one-pointedness doesn't really mean that much in English. I mean, it is bringing things to one peak. Eka, gata. Eka is one and gata is like a peak. So I think collectedness and unification is a good translation there. And again, the whole process here as well, you can't force these things. A unification is something which happens gradually and which happens when two things naturally start to flow and mix together and become one at some stage. So that is the meditation process, so to speak, there. Good. So that is a bit of introduction for you in terms of meditation. One other tool that I would like to mention that really, really made sense to me when I heard Ajahn Brahm teaching it. Some of you might be familiar with it. Ah, that dog there is very nice. He has the same clothes like me. Also brown. It's always nice when you see the people on the other end. Even though, you know, we don't have much interaction on all these Zoom kind of thingies, but it's good to see your faces and to see not just human beings, but also animals. putting their ears up or letting them relax. Wonderful. Okay, so what I wanted to mention there was the three steps on the way in meditation. And Ajahn Brahm says the three steps. The first one is recognizing. The first one is recognition. The second one is familiarity. And the third one is ease. And so with all these things that I've just described to you, for some of you who have meditated for a long time, you might know exactly what I'm talking about. For others, it might be a bit like a foreign land. It might be something which is a bit unknown, like I was saying with that bird, you know. You don't know where you're stepping out into. There is a bit of fear, there is a bit of anxiety maybe connected with making that step. So when you hear people talk about these things and describe those things, you get a bit of an idea. And through that idea, you can start to recognize when these things start to arise in your body and start to arise in your mind. And very often, they can be quite subtle. Sometimes they really, you know, they kind of flood into the mind, and then you can't not recognize them. Very often that happens to new meditators. But also they can be very, very subtle. So the first step is to really recognize them. And it's like when you're meeting another person or when you're going to a new place, you start to recognize the landmarks, you start to recognize the abilities in the other person, their characteristics. You start to kind of see where they're coming from, how they're like. And through that process of recognizing, through that process of getting to know them, over time you start to familiarize yourself with those states, like you familiarize yourself with a person or with an environment. And through that second step, the grasping that might be coming through fear or the kind of unease that might be coming through that situation starts to slowly seep away and ease away. So familiarity always brings an ease with it. If you feel familiar with people, then you know, you feel at ease in their company. First, just, you know, a little bit. And then once you know them really, really well, once you know them that you can trust them and that you can also trust yourself so that you can bring yourself to that other person or in that other environment with confidence, without having to hide things, because that is always a certain effort of having to build walls or having to cover things up or whatever it might be. And if you don't have that, if you have this feeling of safety, this feeling of confidence, then that grows from familiarity into a deep, relaxed ease where you're just so happy to hang out in that environment. Yeah, if there is different sounds, you're familiar with those sounds, so they don't bring up you know, feelings in you that might be unpleasant. And you're so familiar with the person and the characteristics of that person and of yourself, how you are in that environment, how you are with that other person, how you are with a group, like with the Armadale Meditation Group, you know, which has been around for over 30 years now, or maybe it's already getting to 35, I don't know. Time goes so quickly. Right, okay. So I hope that is a bit of introduction, a bit of, you know, a couple of tools or pointers for you to take into the meditation that we will be doing together very soon. So please find a nice posture, find a nice chair or a nice mat or a cushion or a pillow or whatever it might be. Or if your body needs, you know, even to lie down because it can't sustain, you know, a position for a long time because you might have, you know, back problems or problems with your body in a certain area, please don't force yourself to stick to a certain position. So meditation is about the attitude that we bring to it, much less so than how the body actually is. So please feel relaxed and feel at ease there as well. And yes, I don't have to tell yourself feel at home, because I think most of you are actually at home. So hopefully that can help the meditation there. Okay, great. once you've done that, then we can start to embark on this journey to learn to fly, to learn to soar like a bird. So we have kind of built our nest now, where we have hatched as birds, where we've lived as birds, but we are now ready to go a step further, to explore, to experiment, and to trust that our wings have grown enough and are strong enough to carry us. Because once we embark onto meditation, the ground that we've been standing on starts to slowly, slowly fade away, and we rely on those good energies, on those good winds that could be compared with the wholesome mind states that arise in meditation when we reflect in the right way, when we relate to the objects that come up in meditation in the right way. Okay, anyway, so I hope you have all been able to close your eyes if that feels comfortable for you, and be able to check in with what is happening in your body and mind in the present moment. The talking and the introduction is also there to guide you away from your day-to-day worries slowly, slowly towards the meditation, so we don't jump in at the deep end straight away. So you've actually already, by listening attentively, by being here with the Armadale Meditation Group, even though it's a digital space, to already calm down a little bit and distance yourself a little bit from the daily worries and concerns. So you've actually already been flapping your wings, training and practicing for what will be coming next. And then, as I was saying before, it's the application of the mind that is the next step here, applying it to an object and applying it in a soft, gentle, and kind way. And one of the best objects in the beginning is our body. Just checking in with how it feels to be here now. What is actually happening? Not what we are thinking about, or what we might add on top of the sensations that are here. See if you can just be with the sensations. And in the beginning, maybe even without guiding your mind to any specific part of your body, just letting it be guided by the sensation. Are there any strong sensations around? Are there any, maybe even slightly unpleasant sensations around? And if that is the case, let's see if we can ease them. If we can, first of all, find out what's going on. The curious, inquisitive mind. And then see if we can relax. So that might be a scratch, that might be a loosening, that might be a repositioning. So whatever we can do on the physical level of actually moving. Or even putting our hand on the part which is a bit sore or unhappy. And just sending our goodwill. And kind vibes to that part of the body. Please feel free to move around at this stage. If there is different sensations that call your attention, so to speak, let your kind attention attend to these things with tenderness, with care. With a genuine concern for their well-being and their happiness. And hopefully, if you are relating in the right way, and right means in the kind way, in the relaxing way, you will feel your body responding. You might not hear the words, thank you, but the thank you of the body is the relaxation and the ease. And for myself, there is a certain heaviness that comes with it, but this pleasant heaviness of when you let go, your body parts settle. And they ground you. It's this groundedness of confidence and of safety. That allows you to not hold on. To not have to grasp. or to push or to pull. But you can let yourself go. And the ground and the groundedness is meeting you to support you. So instead of holding or pushing, you're feeling the support. The support of the ground, of the mat, the pillow, or the chair. But also the support of your skeleton. So the structure is there. You can let your muscles relax. And the energy of relaxation, of contentment, of joy is what is holding you up. It's not your making, it's not your will. It's the energy which is released by relaxation. By trust. By feeling at ease. And there is this subtle, or maybe even fairly strong, rapture and pleasure that arises when we do let go. Might be a tingling, it might be warmth, might be a feeling of floating. It might be bubbly, might be vibrations, but joyful, pleasant ones. And if they're especially strong in a certain area of the body, consider that area the source, the spring of it for this meditation. Might be in different places at different times. And let it bubble up. And spread and overflow to all corners of your body. Radiate out, up and down and left and right, back and front. So So it touches all parts of your body. All corners of your being. And as you are recognizing and familiarizing yourself, becoming at ease with those energies that come from letting go, you're automatically drawn into this process. And your little bird who has been flapping its wings has enough confidence to step out of the nest. Step out of this body. And let it fade into the background. So its shape is not clear anymore. Because you are settling on the feelings of happiness and joy. The ease of relaxation. And you're getting more in touch with your mental world. With the way you relate. With the way you are with whatever arises. And as you are with your mind, see if you can relax into your mind. And as I described before, it might be a bit of trial and error in this area if you're not used to be with your mind. With the movement of maybe thoughts or emotions that might still be around. Or distractions from the past or the future. See if you can meet those things that arise in your mind. Just listening to them, being kind to them like we were kind to our bodies before. And see if familiarity and ease can bring relaxation. It's okay, it's just thoughts, it's just emotions. It's just energies flowing through the system. Let them come and let them go. Let them flow. And again here, if you relate in the right way, there is a subtle happiness and joy that comes by just sitting there and letting these things be. Letting them pass through, do their thing. And here as well, you might be able to feel the support of the air. You spread your wings of kindness, gentleness, non-reactivity. Basically, awe of what is happening. And you can feel the pleasant energy of letting go and relating in the right way. That will start to carry you. Lift you so you can fly and soar. hopefully you were able to encourage your mind to just be. Looking on with kindly eyes. And letting the movements of the mind calm down. Slow down. And flow past you. And with less and less activity from the mind, it starts to become more and more quiet. Calm, quiet, and peaceful. In the same way you were with your body and with your mind, you can hopefully now be with your breath. Gently holding your breath. Or gently be held by your breath. Sometimes you don't know the difference anymore. With the gentle movement the breath coming in and the breath going out. Or simply supported by the breath. The joyful energy that arises in this process. get carried by this beautiful wind of the meditation process. And as I was peeking at the clock, I realized I got carried away by the wind as well. Time has gone really fast. We have already arrived on the other side of the meditation. We must have caught some jet stream somewhere along the way. But please, before we have a soft landing, reflect on how that was for you. See what has worked. See where there might still be some challenges. See how you related to whatever arose in the process. But most of all, feel the impact this has all had on your body, on your mind, on your breath. On your emotions, your thoughts. And could you let go, spread your wings and be supported by this process? Catching the uplifting winds of piti sukha, of pleasure and happiness. I will be ringing the gong soon to hopefully gently bring you back into your body and back into your home or wherever you are right now. Okay, feel free to open your eyes and wiggle your body or stretch or whatever. Enjoy the feeling that this has brought and value and treasure it and see if you can guard it for a little bit longer so it can come with you into your day. So it's not just this meditation we had together, this time we had together, that we shared together, but that it reverberates. What we did in meditation was the application of the mind, and now it's this sustained hum, this sustained reverberation, like the singing bowl, sometimes that is used as a simile. The applied awareness is the striking of the gong, and the sustained awareness is the tone which carries on for a longer and longer period of time. Okay, so that was that part. I enjoyed myself. I hope you did as well. Sorry if I did get carried away a bit too much. I hope there wasn't too much talking for you guys. But as I often say, if you are meditating in a different way, please feel free to just, you know, ignore my voice in the background there and just go with whatever arises in your meditation. It's different, different days, different in different meditations. We need different tools at different times. Yep. Do we have questions?
Thanks, sure. Opening it up for questions. If there are any questions either arising from today's practice and talk or something else connected to the Dharma, we have Bhante, Bodhidharma here. Make the most of this opportunity.
Sure, we are quite a small group. If there aren't any questions, I'll be happy to try and talk a little bit more. Last time, I was just after the meditation, I felt peaceful and nothing really came to my mind. But I know it's part of our training as well to be able to talk a little bit if time comes. I'm not a dumber machine like Ajahn Brahm yet, where it's just so natural that things just flow. In my meditation and, you know, in guiding meditations in the past, I would prepare the meditations a little bit or, you know, think. I mean, I know I had a theme, but still very often in meditation, I really kind of let myself be guided by the process. And I do think that is the natural way of giving a Dhamma talk as well. And that is very, very inspiring to see that, how Ajahn Brahm can do that. It's something that I'm still learning. That's why I always bring a few crutches, bring a few ideas, because it just doesn't flow the same way. Like when, as I said, when I'm meditating with you guys, then it flows very naturally and things do arise out of stillness, arise out of the process, and then they come into the guided meditation and it's guided from there. And that's how I perceive, at least, Ajahn Brahm's talks are happening. In the past, he was quite structured as well. In his early talks, he would, you know, have certain topic and go 1.1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth. And it would be, you know, really kind of all packaged up. Also, I guess, fairly naturally happening so. But these days, his talks are just so, it's like anecdotes, and one anecdote leads to another anecdote. And I'm not really a monk of many words so far. I usually feel quite happy, you know, if there is questions and I can respond to someone, because then there is a listening on my side, and I think I'm a better listener than a talker if I don't prepare. But then I can wait for an answer to arise and I can just let the answer come out, and it comes out for, you know, a couple of minutes, and when it's out, I can stop with the Dhamma talk. I sometimes feel a bit uneasy because I have this kind of 45 minutes or an hour that I kind of have to get through. And there is a point where I feel like I have said what I've said to a certain topic. And then I just go like, what shall I add to this? I don't have stories or things that kind of come up. Anyway, so I've given you a chance to think a little bit if there is comments or questions, or otherwise I would be happy to carry on a little bit longer. Open it up to the floor.
That was really nice.
Okay, thank you. Glad you enjoyed it. Nothing happy chappy.
Okay.
Yes, please.
How to sort of let go? How do you do
that? How to let go? Yes, that is one of those questions that gets asked very, very often. And Yeah, let me see what kind of answer we can give to that. There is many, many levels to it as well. So I guess one way of describing the letting go is like you do with your body. You know, I mean, you're holding on to something for some reason and you are kind of tensing around something, and then you let go, and letting go has to do with the relaxation. That happens also in your hand. But sometimes we have to understand what we are attaching to and why we're attaching to what we are attaching to and how we are attaching. So what is our mind state? Is it fear, for example, that has this kind of clinging there? Or is it a certain attraction? Is it maybe greed that has us attached to something? Or is it maybe even, you know, a certain type of delusion there? Is it just a habit that we are used to hold on to these kind of things? And we don't even feel it as much anymore that we are actually holding. And in meditation, we are trying to soften that grip. And every time we do let go, there is something happening in your mind. There is a relaxation, first of all, in your body, in your being. And there is a certain joy and a certain happiness. There is a freedom and a contentment which comes from that letting go. So one part is understanding what's going on, feeling that we are actually being tense, knowing why we are tense, and then trying to apply tools to soften that grip, to let go, to just put whatever that thing is down. So we realize the feelings that are happening within us, we realize what the thing might be, and then we try to just see, can we put it down for a little while? Can we let it go temporarily? And feel what the effect of it is. Often when we talk about let go, we think, you know, you let go and that's it. You've let go, fine. But very often that is actually not the case. We have a little bit of letting go. We have a little bit of relaxation that comes. But then we are back into our old habits. We are back into our old patterns. We are something else, you know, kind of starts to arise within us again. And then we have to be mindful enough to feel that things are narrowing down again, that things are becoming a little bit forced again. And then we realize, okay, because these things are arising in me, I must be holding on to something. And then identifying and letting go again. And then just extending the period of when we've actually let go. And the longer that period becomes, and the more we feel the benefit of when we have actually let go, the more willing and able we will be to let go even more in the future. And as I was describing before, for myself, it often has to do with trust. So we trust the situation. We realize, you know, it's like coming up to this talk today. Usually I do prepare quite a bit, and then I can trust the structure that I have prepared. I know I have a guideline which will take me through the evening. But tonight I had to come up and say, like, okay, after the meditation, there might be no questions. I have nothing to hold on to. Can I just let that go? And can I just be with the group and see what happens? And see if I can have relaxation and ease with the group. And if it's not there, if there is this tensing up, how can I try and soften that and let it go just for a moment? Put it down and then see what happens. Yes, that's kind of what comes to mind. I know letting go has so many levels and so many ways. So in meditation, we let go of the body. We let go of the mind and the movements in the mind. We connect with the breath, but we eventually even let go of the breath. We trust the process. We trust the breath so much. we trust that we will come up with something. Like I trust that I come up with something in the meditation, trust that I can come up with something in whatever, 25 minutes, half an hour that we have together after the meditation. And then it becomes more of a second nature to you. And you realize, okay, this is what letting go is. You're familiar with what letting go is. You feel at ease with being able to let go in situations that you before weren't able to let go. You have a certain mind state that arises. Last week there was something which was happening in the monastery, and I realized it was just stuck to my mind. And it just would arise again and again and again. So what do you do? So what I did have to do is to put it down again and again and again, and then trust every time I put it down that it will stay there for a little bit longer. And then when it came back, I had to ask myself, why did it come back? Why am I holding to this? It's not really helpful to hold on to it in this way. You know, I want to make sure there is peace and harmony in the whole community. There is peace and harmony in my mind. If I'm holding on to something and I can't let it go, then I will drag that with me into the relationship I have with other people. I'll drag that with me into the meditation, into my sleep. How do you let go to sleep? You try to relax. You try to put things down. Or, of course, another aspect of letting go is you have something that attracts you, something pleasant, something comfortable that loosens the grip of whatever is there and makes you hold on. So if you're lying in bed and there is thoughts that you can't let go of, if you can focus on something that is happening in the present moment, if you can focus on your body and relaxation that happens when you are focusing on your body in the right way, then that will loosen your grip of the other thing happening there. So sometimes we can apply our mind directly to what is happening, but sometimes we can use another object that we focus on. So we shift our focus and we let ourselves settle on that wholesome, pleasant thing, and that automatically loosens the grip that was there of holding on to that other object. Anyway, I hope that is some information for you there. Okay, very good. You will be joining the retreat as well, is that right? That's you, Peksha. Okay, very good. Yes, I recognize the name, and also it's Adelaide. Yeah, for the other people who might not know, Venerable Chunda and myself will do a meditation day on the 17th and 18th of April. It's a Zoom meditation day, so it's all online, like this thing here. We give a bit of talks, guidance. We give guided meditations. We have group interviews. We have a Q&A session. And we do have a digital meditation hall, which is basically a little bit like this, but you do sit together in silence in front of a screen. So some of you might think this is a bit strange. And I have different kind of experiences with it. I mean, one of them, of course, is that sometimes I like to be, you know, forget about the world, just not have a screen in front of me and just sit in my hut. Sit in the present moment and not have to bother or think about anything in the world. But sometimes it's also nice to know there is a group out there. So you join and you see a couple of other faces who are meditating there with you, and you feel the energy of that group. You feel the community of that group. And that can be something which inspires you, which motivates you to sit. And that can also help the process along. So I'm part of a group, mainly in Switzerland, but some people are also in Australia and in Sri Lanka. And we do sit together. I try to make it once a day. So we support each other, even in the digital kind of world there. Okay, good. We still have a bit of time. So one other thing that I wanted to mention because I came up and I thought, okay, what am I going to talk about? So let's talk about finding it difficult to talk about, to give a talk without being prepared. And I reflected on how usually my talks kind of come to be. And one of the things that happens for me, and is usually a very organic process, where I can, what I described before, let the stillness, let just whatever is out there inform the talk that I will be giving later down the track. So I'm not doing it in the present moment, like I think Ajahn Brahm does it, where he just sits there and there is enough kindness and stillness and peace, so things just flow in. So for me, usually I choose a certain topic. So I have a topic, like for example, for the next retreat, I have the topic renunciation. Or I do, you know, choose a topic that I feel is somehow close to me. And then I know, okay, there will be a next group, a next Armadale group somewhere down the track. And then I let that idea simmer or sit in my heart, sit in my mind. And then I start to collect things that come up. So there might be, you know, teachings that Ajahn Brahm gives. There might be some lessons that come during the day. There might be those moments, like sometimes, you know, I'm having a shower and suddenly something arises that I couldn't have thought about. So if I sit down at my desk and I try to write it all down and put it in a PowerPoint, what I used to do in the past, then it just doesn't flow in the same way. Because there is too much, again, force or too much thinking, too much structure involved in the whole process. So you need this stillness and peace and space for creativity to arise, because otherwise we are just repeating what other people have said. And of course, part of it is we're always repeating what we've heard somewhere. But there is these moments that I feel that come up and connect some of those things in a way that haven't been seen by yourself that way before. And then I feel quite confident and quite happy to bring that and share that with other people. Like the, you know, the meditation when I was sitting by myself and this kind of bird image just came up. And I just followed it. And it was something which just really lifted my heart, which kind of made sense, which motivated me, which brought me deeper into meditation in that sitting. And then I kind of bring it along and incorporate it into a teaching session such as this one. So what happens then? I usually have, you know, a couple of weeks, days, or sometimes even months. And whenever these things come up, I write them down. So, you know, I have a little kind of note thing on my computer and I have the topic there. And every time something comes up, I just drop it into that box. And then there comes the process of putting all these ideas together. And that's how usually most of my talks or retreats or things come together. So it is actually quite a process. But maybe with time, maybe, you know, with confidence, with learning to fly through a Dhamma talk, not just to fly through a guided meditation, I will be able to do that process that for me now usually takes quite a long time to bring that together in a much, much shorter space of time. And I do feel that is something important that came up during the Noble Eightfold Path course that we were teaching as well. Someone asked the question and said, you know, Ajahn Brahm says, the wisdom always arises out of stillness. And we were talking about reflecting wisely about things so you're able to incorporate the Dhamma into your day-to-day life. You're able to have some insights in your day-to-day life. And one participant was asking, you know, that doesn't make sense to me. Reflection is something active. Reflection is like you're thinking about something. And stillness, letting go, is on a different spectrum of this whole thing. So she wasn't quite able to bring these two things together. And I tried to explain to her that for me, it's the process I've described before. So it is not a reflection, or maybe I like the word contemplation, because when you're contemplating something, you are not thinking about it with a problem-solving mind. You're not thinking about it in terms of, I have this problem, I have to solve this problem, and I have to now, you know, really think hard about the problem and crack it, so to speak. That usually doesn't work from my experience. So you are setting your mind in a certain direction, and that's what I do with a theme. The theme comes up and I was like, okay, this is something to be contemplated. This is something I like to investigate a little bit further, but not with sitting down and just going like, right, I'm going to figure this out. But with this attitude of just dropping it in to my day-to-day life or dropping it into stillness. I described to her that very often, actually, these things start to arise when I don't think about it. So I have primed my mind, I've put the idea into my mind, and it has actually happened a couple of times now that I do wake up in the morning and there is a certain idea, there is a certain concept that is connected to that theme. So something has happened overnight. That letting go was there, the information was there though, that this is the, you know, the object to be contemplated. And then something arises from a different place. It doesn't arise from the thinking mind. It arises from the heart, from the mind, as we would say in meditation. And then it just has quite a different punch or a different energy to it. So I encourage you to do the same thing in day-to-day life, to learn to apply yourself to whatever you need to apply yourself in day-to-day life, but to also have enough stillness, to have enough room, to have enough relaxation, so that that creative part, that wisdom part, can arise, can get into the situation. Because if we are too focused in this thinking way, it's like the horse with the blinders. And you can't see what is actually happening out there. And you can't see all the solutions that are sometimes jumping at you because you are so focused on a certain thing you want to figure out, on a certain way, on a certain approach, that you just don't have that openness and that creativity there. Anyway, I actually talk for quite a while now. Do we have any last questions or last comments or anything? Because it's getting time, I think. Hello to Germany.
Jim,
yes, from Berlin. Guten Morgen nach Berlin.
Nachmittag,
das stimmt. Ihr habt sechs Stunden weniger als wir.
Jim's Australian.
All right, yes. Okay, switch back to English so everyone can hear. Please.
Yeah, thank you so much for that very relaxing meditation.
Good.
You mentioned briefly about this digital meditation room. Is this only available during specific retreat times and that kind of thing?
Yes, usually I just open it up during the retreats. And that Venerable Chunda and myself guide. The group that I'm part of is kind of quite a small group, and from what I understand, they wouldn't feel comfortable, you know, to suddenly open it up to a huge kind of thing. And it's actually another monk, Venerable Vishuddhananda in Sri Lanka, who is guiding that group. But because I'm connected to the group in Switzerland, I have access to that, and I do sit with them. But it's quite a simple idea, actually. It's someone who gets a paid account. Let's say, you know, the Armadale Meditation Group has a paid account. And then on that account, you create a digital meditation room. So you have the code for people to join. And then they can basically join anytime. So that's what I find so nice about those retreats, because we have people joining from all over the globe. We have people in the US, in the UK, and in Hong Kong, in Japan, in Germany, and they sit at other times, you know. So when I go to bed, they might still be sitting. So the hall is always open. And you can go in there, and if someone else is sitting, it's kind of a nice thing to sit with the other person. So it's quite simple to create it, but I think the effort that needs to be put in is getting a group together, you know, getting a little bit of a schedule together and say, these are the times that we usually sit together. And then people text to each other and then they start sitting together. But as long as you don't have more than 100 people, a simple Zoom account would do the job. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
It gives me something to think about whether I could try and see if other people here are interested in such a thing.
Sure. Yeah. I found it a nice thing, and especially because it's people I'm personally connected to. It's the supporters I know from Switzerland. Some of the people I've known for many, many years. We've been practicing for a long, long time. And it's nice to have this opportunity to sit together, even though it's just, miles apart.
I've noticed that Uli has put up her hand.
Oh, yes.
I have a question, Uli.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Thank you very much. Also, wonderful for a beautiful meditation. I really enjoyed that today.
Great, thanks.
And regarding the online retreat, is this on the Buddhist website, on the BSWA site, or?
Yes. So,
how is this classified? When is it taking place, in May?
No, it's in April. So there is two places you can find it. So if you go on the BSWA homepage, it is actually in the posts at the moment. There is a post about it. And the second place you can find it is under the events. So you first have the post section, and there is a post there. If you can't find it there, you go to the second section, which is events, and then you just click either on Jhana Grove or Bodhinyana Monastery, and then it will come up for you.
Okay, then I will sign up for this.
Yes, and the other thing you can do is you can just Google. Yeah, the other thing you can do is you can Google Relax and Grow, BSWA Meditation Day, and then you should find it. But that's a mouthful. Anyway, if some of you wish to join, we have about 50 people have joined up, and there is another 50 spots. 17th of April, we start on Friday night, we start on Saturday night, and then do the whole Sunday. So it's basically one day. Oh, very good. Someone has actually already, Jim has already found it and put it in the chat there. That's right. There it is. So you can just click the link there or copy the link and then you will be there. Wonderful. Okay. Thanks a lot for everyone joining in.
Thanks, Bhante. I'd like to just thank you on behalf of the whole group. I don't know if everybody got to soar like an albatross. Floating on the water like a duck.
But you felt hopefully supported by the water.
it was fine to float, but it wasn't quite the same.
Well, that's all right. But I said the top is learning to fly.
In any event, it was most appreciated and lovely to see you. And nice to have that experience of having you try a different way too with
sure.
us. Most appreciated.
Wonderful. Okay, so lovely night, afternoon, whatever it is. May you be happy and well as well, your family. And if there is any, you know, departed relatives or whatever, please think of them as well and share all the merits with them from tonight and from your practice. Okay, bye-bye. Take care.
Good night.
All right. I survived.